I find myself in an odd situation, and it is this. Last week, when we talked about authority from Leviticus 10, I don't know how many of you were paying attention to Ian, but he was right there with us most of the time. In fact, he even tried to contribute with the understanding, their perspective of what we were talking about. His contribution was actually not exactly right, but he was trying, and he was trying to get it. Then after class, on the way out, he said to me that, among other things, he said, "This is really interesting." With all that in mind, I came prepared to talk about it a little bit more. Because if he's getting it, then I wasn't going to let that opportunity go by. I hope he's not hiding behind the bench right now and is listening to me talk about all this. But he's not here tonight. So instead of what I was going to do, we'll do Leviticus 11 through 15. But I'll tell you that it's going to be short tonight, unless you make up for what I didn't prepare for. Okay, so Leviticus 11 through 15. Laws of, I'm not even going to bother to answer the questions. If you want to answer the questions, I could take up the time of class and answer the questions, but much of what I'll say has to do with the answers. Okay, so what did we read about? Is there one word that stood out? It should have. Okay, cleanliness. The word clean or unclean is used 200 times in the Old Testament. In our section tonight, how many of those 200 times do you think it was used? 100. In my version, exactly 100. So your version might use a different word. That's just the word clean and unclean. That's not pure and unpure and abomination and things like that. So in other words, if we want to understand clean and unclean for the rest of the Old Testament, I think we should spend a little bit of time talking about it from these four chapters. Five chapters, right? 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Five. I can count. All right, so here's the question for you. Are these about physical health? No.
They could have some.
Could have. John's agreeing with Gary.
Dual
meaning?
Well, yeah. If they did not have anything to do with physical health, there would be no implication for us to make.
Okay. Yes, yeah, so how directly related are they to the physical health? The primary purpose of the laws of cleanliness. I don't doubt that there is some hygienic... Am I going to change it now? Some hygienic... relevance to these laws, I'm sure there is. But let me ask you a couple questions. I don't know. No, it's on. I'll give this 1 minute. Oh, or did I do... Come on. Are you sorry? I don't think it really matters for anything that I've got. Okay, here, let's start with this one question. Did you read, when a woman gives birth to a man, a boy, when a woman gives birth to a boy, how long is she impure for?
7 days.
7 and 33, and if a girl, 14 and 66. So what, is there 33 more days worth of germs with a girl than a boy? Maybe. Okay. At the same time, it turned to 11:26. Chapter 11, verse 26. Concerning all the animals which divide the hoof, but do not make a split hoof, or which do not chew cud, they are unclean to you. Whoever touches them will be unclean. Okay, so here's the question. If you touch a pig, you become unclean, but if you touch a lamb, you don't? Why not? What's the difference?
God made the ruler.
Okay.
Lambs are generally thinner than pigs.
I don't want to sleep with one or really hang out with one too much. Although, yeah, I agree. But you could say camel also. All right. So, and later on, so Peter's having this vision. Down comes a blanket, up goes the blanket, down comes the blanket. Peter says, no, I'm not going to eat all the unholy animals on there. And God says,
What
I've called clean. Did he spray Clorox all around the globe? Then what's up with the cleanness and the uncleanness?
God defines it.
It's not necessarily associated to hygiene and nature. I mean, it's associated with it, yes. But that's not the primary point, obviously. Okay, especially a leper, but all throughout this, when somebody was sick or they wanted to know something about this cleanness and uncleanness, who did they go to? The priest. Why not the doctor? Because after all, who do we go to if, you know, we're going to find out about eczema? We don't go to the local whoever he would be. We go where? To the doctor. Doctor, skin doctor, look, take a look at me. But they went to the priest. And there were doctors. Where did they just come from? Egypt. Egypt is widely known. They had brain surgery back then. And here they're going to the doctors. Okay. If you, in a cleansing ritual, you take one bird and you do what with the one bird? And then what do you do with the other one? Under running water and all this stuff, you're slaughtering the one, and then the other one, you take it. Sorry?
You dip it in the one's blood.
Yeah. And then you let it fly away, go away. Could you imagine going down to the RX these days and saying, I've got a problem, help me. And he takes one bird and kills it, and the other bird, and he lets it fly away. You say, what's up with the other bird? What possible medicinal value does that have? It doesn't. It's something else. If it really applied to everything, but it's mentioned in the unclean, when a guy or a woman or a man is unclean, at the very end of it, if they have a discharge, then if anybody in my camp is unclean and has an unclean discharge, then my, what would be defiled, do you remember? The tabernacle. This applied to everything. So let me ask you this. You eat a piece of bacon and the temple, the tabernacle, gets dirty?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Not physically. It's not like it got germs all of a sudden. Okay. One other passage to look at. There's a passage in the New Testament which essentially helps to show that these laws aren't really about hygiene. There might be something about hygiene in there. I'm sure there is. But not primarily, they're not about hygiene. When the apostles don't wash their hands, the Pharisees come to them and say, come to Jesus and say, hey, why don't your disciples wash their hands? And he says, you hypocrites, your heart is far from me. And then he turns to everybody else and says, it's not what goes in, but what comes out that defiles the man. Oh, in other words, all these rules back there, they're not really about the defiling, or they are about defiling, but a different kind of defiling, right? In other words, what he's saying is that these rules, okay, at the same time, okay, so if they're not primarily about health, let me back up a second. We live in how many worlds?
Two.
Good. What are those two worlds?
Physical.
If they're not primarily about the physical, then what are we left with? The spiritual world. Okay, so a man comes and asks Jesus, what's the greatest commandment? And Jesus answers, do you remember what I'm talking about?
You love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, strength, and your neighbor as yourself.
Okay, and what's the next verse? Do you remember?
For doing so, you keep the law. Yeah. All the law and the prophets are wound up in all.
Exactly. I like your paraphrase. Matthew 22:40. On these two commandments depend the whole law and the prophets. So if you open up and you read, don't eat a pig, and don't wear mixed clothing, and don't whatever it is, What does it really have to do with?
Honoring God.
Honoring God, teaching us how to honor God and how to love one another. That's the primary. Is there something hygienic in there? I'm sure there is. I don't know what it is. Not always, especially. But primarily. And now, you can actually get that out of Leviticus 2 for the most part. First of all, you ask yourself, what's the difference between a pig and a sheep other than what is called posited law or positive law, okay? It's a law that's not necessarily inherent to the thing itself, but it's something that God declared, okay? All right, Leviticus 14. Yeah, Leviticus 14, it's the laws of cleansing the leper. He goes to the priest, and he does a whole bunch of stuff before the priest. Verse 19. The priest shall next offer the sin offering and make atonement for the one to be cleansed from his uncleanness. Then afterward he shall slaughter the burnt offering. The priest shall offer up the burnt offering and the grain offering on the altar. Thus the priest shall make atonement for him, and he will be clean. You see this? You see how being clean and being atoned for are connected there? So it's connecting the spiritual world with the natural world. We have an expression, cleanliness is
next to godliness.
In this case, it's not next to godliness, it's connected to godliness. Cleanliness is connected to godliness. That's what he's trying to pound on over and over. Look in 15, probably the clearest. Chapter 15, verse 15. If a man has discharge, he goes to the priest. Verse 15, the priest shall offer them one for a sin offering and the other for a burnt offering. So the priest shall make atonement on his behalf before the Lord because of his discharge. And it's the same thing for the woman in verse 30. Okay. But there, again, we see it's directly connected. All of this stuff, there are a couple hints here and there. What's really going on? It's connected. He's connecting the spiritual world to the natural world. If an alien was trying to... I've been on an alien kick recently, haven't I? Sorry. If an alien was trying to describe a black hole to an earthling, what kind of language is he going to use? Language that we understand to describe something we don't. Here, God is trying to tell them something about sin. He's trying to drive home points, whatever these points might be. We'll look at it in a minute. But he's trying to drive it home to them using language that they understand. They're an agrarian society. They're going to understand a cow and a pig and a camel and such things. Comments or questions so far? Gary?
No, and over and over again, the process that they have to go through to it's kind of like to separate themselves from what is unclean. You know, I mean, there's this big process that, you know, the atoning, the sacrifices, and the, you know, in the spiritual sense, when sin gets into us, the process we need to do to get it out, and you know, that you know, I think there's some connection there to, you know, what, you know, how serious this is.
Oh yeah.
You know, and I think that's, you know, kind of goes along with what you're saying.
Yeah, and part of, I'm going to get there in a few minutes. Part of emphasizing its seriousness is every time something happened to a person, what has to happen to an animal? It dies every time. Sometimes more than one die, right? Over and over. Sometimes you got to pile on all these sacrifices and something's dying over and over and over. Well, not the same thing, obviously. Okay. All right, so a couple things. Anybody else have a comment or question here?
Please.
Yes?
Okay, you were just talking about the principle of every time something dies, every time there is sin, something has to die. That fits right in with the question in Romans about may we sin like grace may abound. Well, the people he's talking to should be able to apply exactly the old law. They didn't want to sin over and over and over again and have all this stuff pile up. It's, you know, it's the exact same thing that's going on here.
Yeah.
And they should have been trained by now to not think that was okay.
Yeah, but they missed the point of
right.
the sacrifices
right.
and the whole law. Yeah, good point. Quick question. Are these laws still in effect now?
No.
So, did I just take your word for it? Or give me a pass. Hebrews. Yeah, that works. Colossians.
Galatians 3:1.
What does it say?
You foolish Galatians.
Go on.
Galatians 3:10, for as many are the works of the law are under a curse. Curses everyone who does not abide by things written in the book of the law to harm them.
Right. Yeah, I mean there's numerous passages. Say it again.
2:14,
yes.
2:14.
Right. Which says
right in there, you know that this is in the middle of a sentence there, but having wiped out the handwritten requirements that was against us, which was contrary to us, he has taken it out of the way and nailed to his cross.
Yeah, yeah. Hebrews talks about the changing of, if there's a changing of a priest, there must have been a changing of the law, so on and so forth. Right. Just to be clear that we're not talking about laws that are still in effect. Some principles may still be. Obviously, some of the principles are very much, right? Sin, bad. Yeah. Okay. There's your profound thought for the evening. All right. Leviticus, four things. I wish I could turn on my little machine right here. But four things that, four characteristics of sin that I can get out of this passages. You probably can get more. Four characteristics of sin. First of all, sin's consequences. Sin's consequences. Look in chapter 14. Well, this word, you don't have to look there, really. This word that occurs 100 times. What was this word? Unclean and unclean. Right. As dirt causes an object to be unclean, sin causes the soul to be unclean, right? That's the point. You get a stain. In fact, Jeremiah talks about the stain of your iniquity. Other passages talk about it also. We're talking about the stain of your iniquity. It's figurative expression, but they should have gotten it because they understand, oh, if I'm unclean, I've got to change my clothes or whatever the case might be. So there's a corruption of the soul. A second consequence is separation from God. What happened to the one who had leprosy?
Sent out to a camp by himself.
Yes, all by himself. By the way, do all of your versions use leprosy? Okay, it's not the leprosy that we think of. Because if, for example, it got on clothing also, it's more like a mold of some kind. Nobody really knows what it is. The first documented, what is it? What is leprosy? The technical term. Anybody know what it is? Haman's disease or something. Can't remember the name of it right now. Anyway, the first documented cases of what we recognize as leprosy didn't come until after this was written. That doesn't mean it wasn't there. It's that historically we don't know about it. Okay. So the leper was thrown outside of the camp. What's in the middle of the camp? The temple. If the leper can't come into the camp, where can't the leper get to? The temple, right. The tabernacle, the temple. Can't get to God. The wages of sin is? Right. Your sins, what does Isaiah 59:2 say? Your sins have separated you. That seems to be the point of this. If you're unclean, if you're a leper, you're kicked out of the camp. Another characteristic of sin is its influence. What happened when something that was unclean touched something else?
Something else became unclean.
Right. It became unclean. Sometimes that had to be smashed, sometimes washed, sometimes burned, whatever the case might be. But it was transferred. This unholiness, this uncleanness is transferred. Go ahead.
It's the idea of leaven.
Yeah, exactly. Right. In fact,
Paul uses that illustration
for first Corinthians. Right. Where am I in my notes here? Yeah, 1 Corinthians 5, Galatians 5, 9. A little leaven leavens the whole lump. Here's another one. Bad company. 1 Corinthians 15:33. Romans 5:12. As sin entered the world through one man, and death through sin, so death spread through all the world because all sinned. It's the same point being made. Look, he's saying sin is contagious. If you let a little sin in, even the littlest bit, it's going to go, it's going to spread like what we say, wildfire. Sin's nature. Look in chapter 11. Chapter 11. By the way, who in here likes shrimp? Yeah. Yeah. Detestable.
I like pig, too.
Pork. Good stuff. My son was asking for pork the other day. He wanted pork because it's got meat. Okay. But what is it? It's detestable. Okay. Verse 10. Whatever in the seas and in the rivers that does not have fins and scales, among all the teeming life in the water, among all living creatures that are in the water, they are detestable things to you. They shall be abhorrent to you. You may not eat their flesh, and their carcasses you will detest. Whatever in the water does not have fins and scales is abhorrent to you. Okay, that included shrimp, all right? And as we mentioned, pig. Pig, it's horrible, detestable to you. Who in here naturally thinks that pig is detestable? We like it. Here's the point. Whatever God says is detestable, we better start thinking it's detestable. Because he said it is. You know, here's one application of that. It's an extreme one. Homosexuality. Detestable, isn't it? Horrible. You think about it, it makes you want to cringe. Heterosexual sex outside of marriage. Drunkenness. You know, my brother, when this shooting in Newtown, or Newton, or whatever you want to say, when it happened, what he wrote to me in an email was, this is the Satan. This is the real Satan. The Satan that makes everything look so good. This is him. This is what he wants. When we see marriages fall apart, this is what he wants. He makes things look good, but in reality, he wants what is detestable. We should always think of it as detestable. Excuse me. Excuse me. Comments or questions here? When my wife and I lived in Hungary, they had what was the local equivalent of a Dachau and Auschwitz.
Prison camp?
Yeah, prison camp, Holocaust. Concentration camp. So they had what they called terror house, and it was where all the local socialists had taken over and all the atrocities they had done, and they had literally bulldozers, videos of bulldozers pushing bodies into mass graves, things like that. I mean, the things that you look at it and it is abhorrent to you. Marcy and I are going down in the elevator from where they had one display to the prison, to the prisons, where they would torture people. On the way down, there is a video playing in the elevator of the atrocities that are committed. And while Marcy and I are going down, there were kids in the elevator. Do you know what they were doing? Laughing. Laughing. It may be because they didn't know what else to do. You know, they're adolescent. You know, what in the world's going on here? At the same time, my experience is when I talk to these people, the grandchildren and the children of to whom that happened, the grandchildren and the children don't know about it because the parents won't talk about it. Okay, so that it could be that the children didn't know how to handle themselves. It could be that they just don't care because that is an attitude over there. Now, that is exactly the point. When you're in terror house, you don't laugh. When something is sin, you hate it, no matter what it is. Hard for us to get our mind wrapped around that, but if we're going to think like God, if we're going to be holy like God, then whatever it is, we better start hating it. Teach yourself to hate the sin. Comments or questions? Gary?
Well, back to your comment about the kids.
Yeah.
Has our society, to some degree, gone to the point that they've cheapened the value of life?
Yeah.
I mean, they just keep cheapening it. I just read an article the other day where Planned Parenthood has killed within the last 3 years
Yeah, we should abhor abortion.
And we're funding it.
Yeah.
Cheapening life.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean anything.
It's making us callous to what is important. Right, and we live in this society, and we have to be aware of it. You know, you can't separate yourself from society. You can't do it. We're told to stay in society, and when we're in society, we've got to understand the society around us for two reasons. Number one, so that we don't get sucked down to their level, and number two, so we can help them come up to God's level. That's the theory here. All right, sin's remedy, as Gary pointed out, chapter 14. The leper, in the day of his cleansing, verse 2, in the day of his cleansing, he will be brought to the priest. The priest shall go out to the outside of the camp. The priest shall look. And if the infection of leprosy has been healed in the leper, then the priest shall give orders and take two live clean birds and cedar wood and scarlet string and hyssop for the one who is to be cleansed. The priest shall also give orders to slay the one bird in the earthenware vessel over running water. As for the live bird, he shall take it together with the cedar wood and the scarlet string and the hyssop, and shall dip them and the live bird in the blood of the bird that was slain over the running water. He shall then, okay, I've got to tell you, I don't know what all that's about there, okay? I know there's a sacrifice. That's one point that we can't miss, that something died. This man's sin, his uncleanness, something died for it. Gary?
If the man had leprosy, that doesn't always mean that he sinned.
Right.
There was a lesson to be learned here, right?
Right. I didn't mean to say sin in there.
Right, because to go along with that, because when he talks about the cleansing of the houses, he says, when you get the land, I put the leper's plague. I, God, put the leper's plague in your house.
Uh-huh.
Not that that household has sinned. They may have. But there's a lesson to be learned.
And did a house sin? No. That's by the way, when you have to atone for the tabernacle, did the tabernacle sin? No. But it shows that as clean as you are, you're not clean enough. Let's clean everything around us too. It's overemphasizing how corruptive sin is. Okay, so there's a sacrifice because of his uncleanness. In the lesson is there's a sacrifice because of sin. Although he has not necessarily sinned, uncleanness represents the sin, right? He shall then sprinkle, verse 7, seven times the one who is to be cleansed from the leprosy, and shall pronounce him clean. Okay, stop right here. This person who has been unclean, to become clean, two things have happened so far. Number one, there has been a sacrifice. Number two, what has happened to the person? Washed in, right here so far, blood. All right? What else do we think is going to happen? Look at verse 8. The one who is cleansed shall then wash his clothes, shave off all his hair, and bathe in water and be clean. And afterward, he may enter the camp, but he shall stay outside his tent for 7 days. It will be on the seventh day he shall shave off his hair, shave off his head and his beard and his eyebrows, even all his hair. He shall then wash his clothes and bathe his body in water and be clean. What had to happen for this guy to be clean? Three things. Number one, there had to be a sacrifice. Number two, he had to be sprinkled with the blood. Number three, he had to be washed in water. Huh. Sound like anything that we know? The New Testament, right? We're washed in Jesus' blood. Our consciences are cleansed. Cleansed by his blood. We have to be washed in his blood. And also, in fact, Revelation talks over and over again about those who have what? Washed their robes in his blood. And of course, baptism is necessary. And Jesus is the one who died for us. He was the sacrifice for us. Comment or question on anything?
I have a question.
Yes.
What is a woof?
A what?
A woof. My translation says woof over and over again.
Yeah. Where is it?
It talks about a wart and a woof in Leviticus 13. Mm-hmm.
And a garment.
Yeah, in verse 48. No. Yeah, whether in wart or woof.
of linen or wool. What is a woof? It comes up over and over. I thought it caught a misspelling until I started seeing it everywhere. I was like, oh, yes. Over and over.
It's something
woof, woof. I have no idea what a woof is.
I think it's something like
the turtle. The threads went both ways. One of them was called the warp, and one of them, yeah. I think a different one was kind of used in English.
Good.
Okay.
Homework. John doesn't have to do it, but I do. Warp and a woof. I don't know why I didn't catch that. A woof is a dog. Okay. All right. Five applications that I can think of. Number one, sin is real. That's part of the lesson we're supposed to get out of here. Now, what does the world tell us today about sin? Is it real?
No.
If anything is not real, it's sin. That's the consequences. Right. There are no consequences. You don't do anything wrong. It's a product, you know, you're a product of your environment, whatever it is, you're not accountable. But there is no such thing as sin. Or there are sins. For example, murder's bad, okay? But, quote unquote, these sins shift from culture to culture, from year to year, from geographic location to geographic location, which brings us up point number two. God is the one who tells us what sin is, over and over. No matter what, especially you who are young or going through public school especially and going to be going into college and then you're going to talk to anybody ever, the world tries to tell you, oh, no, it's not okay, or it's not sin. It is okay. It's whatever it is. It's okay. Television, the trash on television, oh, it's fine. God tells us what sin is. So don't listen to somebody besides the Bible. Remember that forever. Gary, you wanted to say something.
You know, you said it. The world, there's no sin, they're letting all kinds of things in. That's even slipping into Christianity as a whole.
Right.
You know, the whole, you know, everybody's okay, you know, let's not argue about doctrine.
Oh, yeah.
You believe what you believe, and I believe what I believe, and you just let everything in, you know, homosexuals and everything, you know.
Yeah.
It's getting in the church.
Yeah.
If we're not careful.
There's vigilance. These people, what was the priest's job? Do you remember the priest's job? Specifically with reference to what we're talking about. I'll just read it to you. The Lord spoke to Aaron, "Do not drink wine or strong drink, neither you nor your sons with you. When you come into the tent of meeting, so that you will not die, it is a perpetual statute throughout your generations, so as to make a distinction between the holy and the profane, between the unclean and the clean, so as to teach the sons of Israel all the statutes which the Lord has spoken to them through Moses." It was the priest's job to maintain the knowledge base of Israel. If Israel didn't know what was clean and unclean, do you know why? Because the priests hadn't done their job. Now, obviously, you could go down to the library, pick up your scroll, okay? But it was the priest's job. Later on, the priest will be accused of whitewashing, calling what is bad good, and calling what is good bad. Which is exactly what our culture is going through today, even more pronounced than it was 10 years ago. Comments or questions? George?
This is what I was suggesting the other week when we were talking about this, that no matter who I'm talking to, the approach generally boils down to the same thing, but the application, where we have this attitude, yes, there's sin out there, and we start letting it slip, and it gets worse and worse and worse and worse, and we'll let anything go, homosexual clergy, all this kind of stuff like Gary's talking about. And so, look at that and see the solution to all these liberals allowing liberal things to go. Say, okay, well, we need to require clothing to be of a certain length and this kind of thing, okay, to stave off the other issues. Well, they're both missing what God requires. And that's where it's the exact same disconnect when you're talking with them. Exact same thing.
That's what the Pharisees went through. The Hellenism. Hellenism came in and destroyed Jewish society. And the Pharisees said, we're not going to have this. We want God's law. And what did they do? They went too far. Right. Sin needs to be discussed. That's what is God talking about through all this? Sin. Anybody know who Joel Osteen is? What's he known for? Do you know? Sin. Until, like, 3 years ago now, I think, maybe 2 years ago, he never used the word sin. There was Larry King got into an interview with him. Larry King tried to get him to say sin like 15 different ways, and he would not say it. In fact, what do I have here? He says, yeah, I don't use it. I don't use it. He wouldn't say the word. Joel Osteen, Pastor Joel Osteen from down there in Texas, doesn't say the word. You can't preach the gospel without saying the word. You're a sinner. Oop. You know, but he's not going to preach it. We need to talk about sin. Not popular. But if we're not talking about sin, then we're not doing our job. I said the other day, and I think in a lesson, that we have an ulterior motive. It's to talk about sin. Because if we don't, we know that we're going to face judgment. 2 Corinthians 5, 10, 9 and 10. We know we're going to face judgment. Everybody will be judged for their deeds, for their sin. Therefore, we persuade men. So, sin is real. Sin needs to be discussed. God tells us what sin is. Another thing, sinners need to be treated like sinners. That doesn't mean hate the sinner. I'm not saying that. Hate the sin. Love the sinner. Love the sinner. So the first thing we're trying to do is preach to them. Preach. Say, hey, you're unclean. You're unclean. We need to get you clean. At the same time, there is a difference between a Christian and a non-Christian. There's a difference between a clean person and an unclean person. There is a difference, and we have to maintain that distinction in our mind. What does Paul write? That what fellowship has light with darkness, so on and so forth. That doesn't mean we ostracize them and put them over there and never talk to them. That's not what I'm saying. But at the same time, we don't let them in too close either. Because they're not saved. That's the difference. And we've said this before. We're all sinners, but some are forgiven. And then thank God that he provided a remedy for the sin, which is what we have to point everybody to. Hey, that's all I have. Comments or questions? John, that John.
We could see from these passages how difficult was it to be atoned for a sin. And how easy it would be just to maintain cleanliness by obeying God's word.
Yeah. Granted, it might have been a little difficult to maintain cleanliness with all these rules. But it's easier to maintain the cleanliness than to go through all of the atoning process, procedure. A law which was so heavy that Paul writes, we're free of that. We're freedom. You know, we're freed from that, thank God. John.
I was going to say, kind of along with that, is that God is trying to accomplish something by having the Israelis live under this law. And what he has to do that, and what he does throughout all of Scripture, the New Testament included, is he does not reveal himself in terms of shades of gray.
Yeah.
It's always a black and white sort of thing, very, very clear distinction of one side or the other. No, right. No middle ground. And other than the straight and narrow path, right? which is what it is. But he continually reveals himself clean and unclean in these,
yeah,
in these binary, these polar, yep, opposite sorts of things.
No, the law so of excluded middle.
That's right. So there's a very, very clear distinction, and that's what he's trying to get through to them.
Yeah.
Because look at the cesspool they've come out of.
Yeah, and the there's always says, if you don't maintain this, you don't suddenly find yourself in the pit of disgustingness. A culture doesn't. You know, here's a culture that walks the high road, and then it leaves the high road. Does it plunge automatically? No. How does it happen?
Slow.
We call it the slippery slope, right? So, oh, that little thing isn't so bad. Gary likes to point this out. Okay, so accept that little thing. Even though you shouldn't to begin with, but say you did accept that little thing, where are you going to stop?
Yeah.
There's no reason to stop, Gary.
And the importance is, here comes this little thing. What shall I do with it? Well, what does God want you to do? Mm-hmm. Test all things.
Yeah.
How did they test it? They went to the priest. How do we test it? Go to the priest.
Yeah, that's right.
Right here. Every time. Here's this little thing. Well, what about it? What's this little input? What, you know, this is going to hurt a little bit. You know, what's this going to do to me? Test it. Every time. Yeah. Test it. Go to the priest. The priest had an incredible job. People did too.
Yeah.
Go to the priest.
Yeah. I said a culture doesn't plunge. Neither does a person. A person gets a little bit by bit. Next thing you know, somebody comes in, you don't even recognize them, but it's been 5 years. It wasn't just one day, right? Okay, anybody else? Comment or George?
Sorry. Yet for all this, people still try to follow, first of all, the old law. Or follow made-up versions of it that accomplish the same thing. Or even worse, use the old law to try to excuse more liberal attitudes to the new law, which we see the most of.
Yeah.
And that's just unbelievable.
Christian I met a few years ago. Close by, so I won't say more than that. But when I met this person, they were espousing to the younger folks, we have freedom in Christ. There's freedom in Christ. And so I'm going to dress in ways that will provoke every guy that looks at me, and it's their problem, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that. We're going to go, instead of going to church, we're going to go worship on the ocean, on the beach, things like that. Just, you know, total antinomianism. No law. There's freedom. No, there's law, and we got to stick to it. Okay. Anybody else? Last word. Okay. Who's leading songs? George.